This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Pop Experience. Welcome back to another episode of Pop Goes to the Couch. I'm James Gruenberg alongside John Arsenio D'Amato. And tonight we have a new host with us, Greg Diener. Greg and John, how are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, James.
Very good, sir. Very good. I'm on my favorite place, on the couch. My favorite place in the world.
This is the first time I've ever done a podcast with John, so I'm very excited.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's the first time I've done a podcast with John, too. I mean, well, we did the first episode together, yeah.
Yeah, Greg, I'm a big fan of your show. You brought up from TV, you brought up a lot of a lot of memories of some good shows I went through. So when you get to your plug, we'll talk about it more.
Oh, okay.
Now, John, sadly, we have to congratulate Greg. He won the 90s. 90s topic trivia contest last week, and that episode dropped yesterday morning, right, Greg?
Yes, it did. I did pretty well. After we all bombed in the music round, I knew, okay, I got this.
Yep, I won the Harry Potter round, and sadly, John came in second in the 80s round.
Yeah, congratulations. Talk about bombed. Yes, I bombed the whole 80s.
Oh, yeah. It was a tough scene.
So for those of you who are just joining us, we're covering Mighty Ducks Game Changers. Me and John covered episode one. It was called Game Time. John, let's go back. I thought it was a strong, good start to the series. What did you think, John?
Oh, definitely. We already chopped it up about episode one, and we missed out on Greg's analysis. So let's get his thoughts on the first episode, and also on his history with the movies and the Mighty Ducks movies.
My history with the Mighty Ducks movies is, I actually saw it in the theater like when I was 8 years old. It was actually one of the rare movies I ever saw twice in a theater back when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like Home Alone and Mighty Ducks are like the two movies I saw twice in the theater as a kid.
Well, you picked two gems to see twice, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I got the VHS tape of it for Christmas 93. With my Sega Genesis with NHL 94, and I must have worn out that VHS tape a lot back in the day. And I saw D2 in the theater when it came out in 94. I wasn't really a big fan of the third movie, pretty much, but the first two movies bring back a lot of fond memories for me personally. And I actually just acquired the Blu-ray of the first movie prior to the first episode of the show to get ready for it. So,
yeah. Hey, Greg, let me ask you, and also John, put your enemy teams in order. The varsity from D3, the Iceland team, and the Hawks.
Okay, the team from Mighty Ducks 3 last. The Hawks I'd place number 2, and I'd place Iceland at the top.
Ah, okay.
Although I will say, Coach Riley in Mighty Ducks 1, the biggest dick coach in movie history.
I mean, especially like when he knows that the second place banner is there and he looks at Gordon, he goes, "Oh, I wish they would take that one down, don't you?" Yeah.
And he orders the hit on Banks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you stole my answer, Greg. I'm going the Hawks all the way because of Coach Riley, the great Lane Smith. Total prick.
He was a total prick. He was the Bill Belichick of Pee Wee hockey in
1990. all he needed was a friggin' homeless friggin' hoodie. That's all he needed.
So, Greg, what did you think of the first episode, Game Time?
I kind of enjoyed the first episode. I kind of enjoyed being introduced to all the new characters and everything. And it was great to see Emilio Estevez back and everything. And this new heel of a coach they have in this show, he's basically like a new age, like Coach Riley from the first movie, basically a 20-something douchebag. And I love that.
Yeah, that's what me and Jay said.
A pretty boy version of Coach Riley, yeah. Long-haired, young pretty boy, yeah.
And actually, fun fact, one Easter egg I noticed in the first episode. Do you know what the name of the Ducks stadium is?
Yeah, Hendrix Stadium.
Yes, it's a reference to the company from the second Mighty Ducks movie.
Ah, right, right.
That up, and then I had to flash it back to what it said on the stadium, and then I was like, oh, so it's Hendrix Hockey, so now it's Hendrix Stadium.
I'm guessing Michael Tucker from LA Law must have paid a lot of money after the second movie to give him a fancy stadium.
That's hilarious.
Ah, that was a good catch, yeah.
Alrighty, guys, shall we get into the second episode?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
This is the second episode of Mighty Ducks Game Changers. It's called Dusters. As we see, Nick is still doing his podcast on the side while being on the team. It's the team's first practice. And Evan and Alex arrive at the Ice Palace. Alex says she's a little bit nervous because she wants everything to go well. And then so when Evan says, all right, guys, let's get on the ice, Alex cuts him off and says, we're not going to get on the ice today. We're going to do trust and bonding exercises. So she really wants everyone to go around in a circle and reveal something about themselves, something obvious and something on the inside that nobody knows about. What do you think of Alex's coaching here?
It's very unusual coaching methods, to say the least.
It's pretty horrible. Definitely a too touchy-feely. Especially they're way behind and from the other teams and they're skating and all that. And they definitely needed to get out on that ice. And she was definitely too much coaching psychology and getting to know all feelings and too much psychology there. That's not what these Ducks needed at the time. So pretty horrible.
Now keep in mind also they only have 3 days until their first game.
Yeah, and it's a theme that'll come up. As a matter of fact, it'll be like the turning point of the episode, which is she's just emphasizing it doesn't matter about winning and losing and how we played, as long as they go out there and have fun. But we're gonna see that becomes one of the turning points in the episode.
So they reveal each player reveals something about themselves, the obvious, and something on the inside. Sam has no spleen. He likes to do dangerous stunts, but we know that he crashed into a stop sign and he lost his spleen.
Oh, that must have hurt.
Yeah, I can't imagine someone who has to have their spleen taken out. Maya can put people down and make them weak. Lauren on the outside is a female warrior, and on the inside, she's afraid, but she has accepted death. I kind of think that was a little freaky.
So, little too soon to make that judgment, but we'll see how that goes. But what caught me out of that was Nick was saying he has two moms. So
yeah, and then Coop says he's a video gamer, but on the inside he thinks everyone is a fragment of their fragment of his imagination. Like, he doesn't think any of this is real. What do you think of that, Greg?
Does he think we're all living in the Matrix?
I think he does. Like, he sees a bunch. He says he sees a bunch of zeros and numbers on the outside, you know?
Yeah, they're really going heavy. I mean, it's already been established in the first episode that these are all misfits, but I think they went a little too hard to make them, you know, all extra weird. And, you know, especially with the, you know, the females thinking she's a warrior and this one. So they went a little heavy on the eccentricities of the players so far.
So then we get to Logan. He says he loves his hair and he loves cats and dogs. He moved in with his dad because his mom cheated on his dad.
Yeah.
So, John, I guess your observation of that Coach T might be Logan's father went out the window in this episode. Because now we know that he moved in with his dad and he left his mom.
Right, right. Well, you never know.
I know, right? Nick has two moms and is excited to play on the team. And then he says he's on the inside, he's Logan. He says he convinced himself that he's Logan on the inside. I don't know what that meant, but I thought that was a fun line.
I guess he wants to be, you know, he wants to have his looks and his hair and stuff. You know, Logan definitely uses his hair and his looks at a young age. And, you know, the kid knows he's a stud.
So then Alex says, now we're going to do trust falls, which makes Evan annoyed because he understands that they have to hit the ice hard and they got to hit it fast.
Yep. And then he sneaks off to go see Coach to see Gordon, to interrupt Gordon's nap time.
Yeah, which I thought was funny. He's like, I'm napping. It's 1 to 3, and that's my nap time. He goes, I need your help. He goes, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at the end, it looked like, at the end of the first episode, it looked like Gordon was, you know, inching towards being helpful and getting into coaching. But right away here, they established that he's back to square one, but he really doesn't, you know, he tells him give up, really standoffish, and tells him and Alex that he doesn't give a fuck, that he's just wants his money. So.
Yep. So then Evan says his mom's methods are bad because they aren't on the ice. And then Alex goes to Gordon, who says, if it's past 3 o'clock, I am charging you for another full hour. So you better get your practice in right away. Greg, what do you think of Gordon here now?
Well, I'm just kind of wondering where he got in life after D3 that he's now in this situation.
So bitter. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll explain it over the course of the series, but yeah, he's just like back where he was at the start of the first movie. He just doesn't give an F about, I'm guessing probably like, cause he does hint later on about how much he doesn't like the style of the new Ducks. So maybe that's what drove him away from the game. I don't know, but yeah, he's just like, he just wants his nap time.
Yeah, yeah. And Alex is like, Alex is like, why don't you help us like you helped the old Ducks, and he's like, no, those old Ducks, they had me as a coach, and that's the difference. So. Real prickly, yeah.
So basically, Alex wants Evan to accept her methods and that. To trust Alex, and that Evan needs to trust that everything's going to be okay no matter what Alex's methods are. But Evan apparently is not buying it because he knows the game of hockey. And to go back, Alex is, it wasn't really the best hockey parent. You know, she says during like Evan's practices that she was doing emails or basically sleeping. So we know what kind of hockey parent Alex is here.
Yeah, she's just bored to death while at the hockey games, just wanting to pass the time.
So then we get to the next day where they step onto the ice because, you know, again, time is limited with their practice and their skill improvement. But instead of pucks, Alex gives them beach balls because she says that they are safer than pucks.
And yeah, then, I don't see the logic in this at all.
Well, if, you know what I got? Like, it's not like an Easter egg, but like, it comes back to before they play their last game in D2 against Iceland, where he goes, "Let's have some fun." So instead of hitting pucks, we're gonna hit beach balls, and then Coach Danson popped the beach ball.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that scene. Yes.
Yeah, but he did, and like Coach Danson did that so aggressively. He was like, and then Gordon goes, "You owe me a beach ball." So then Alex asks Gordon if he has any hockey equipment, but Gordon says he burned it all in a dumpster fire. So it seems that like Gordon is running again from his past, like he did in the first film after he missed that penalty shot in the championship game. What do you think, John?
Yeah, he really dialed it back to square one, and you know, Evan's really, you know, looking to him as a, you know, to be like a, you know, a leader or a mentor for him, and Gordon just keeps telling him that he doesn't care. Really prickly, really hurtful.
Well, and Greg, also, would you think that that Charlie really wanted Gordon to help him as Evan wants Gordon to help too at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, basically, he is the Charlie Conway archetype of this series.
Oh, and also another thing I picked up, Koob's goalie equipment is what I'm pretty sure Goldberg had when they're playing ice hockey on the pond before Gordon arrives. I picked up on like that Coop definitely has some of Goldberg's old equipment before they get the new equipment.
Maybe he got it at Goodwill or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but like I noticed the yellowness in Coop's outfit. So then they're at a pizza place and Alex is giving team award trophies, basically participation trophies for doing absolutely nothing. And this is really what sets Evan off. And this right here is really something that you do not do, because I have strong feelings about this, like either way. It's like you want to encourage your child to do better, but at the same time, they should not deserve a trophy just for being out there. They have to earn the trophy.
Yeah, Alex is really kind of annoying in this episode. A little too heavy on the touchy feely and the participation with the awards for doing nothing, and really not leading them towards any kind of competitiveness, and really not doing anything to make them better. As you know, as kids, as players, as anything. So really rough for Alex here in this episode.
Greg, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, the only time I ever recall like anyone giving awards before you ever play a game is like maybe when you're named to like a preseason team in college or something. So I don't understand why in the world Alex would give her team trophies. I mean, I played plenty of amateur sports in my day, and I don't recall ever getting a trophy before I played a game. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I was a trophy mark back in the day, and I would love to have a trophy for doing nothing on my wall, but.
you know, what's funny is, I've gotten second place trophies, and I got the All-Star Game trophy, which we didn't even play. And back then, being on the All-Star Game for baseball was a huge deal in my town. Like, you thought you were like the coolest kid. And when I finally made it, it got rained out twice. Like, the one game you want to play and feel like really good about yourself, I didn't get to play. I got the trophy next year. Yeah.
Well, you were named to the team, so that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Like, you know, I earned it too, and it was just like it was so like disappointing and heartbreaking not playing that game because of rain.
It reminded of the classic was it Meet the Parents when I didn't know they gave medals for what was it, ninth place or whatever.
Oh yeah, Meet Greg the Fockers. Yeah.
He had his little wrestling medals up, and it's like, oh, I didn't know they gave medals for ninth place.
So then Alex goes back to the Ice Palace, where she finds Gordon skating and stick handling on the ice. So we know that Gordon still has the touch, you know, like he still got it after how many years it's been since he's either coached or played again, you know, that he's still natural at it.
Yeah. My question is, like, why is the... Is there not a lock on the door at the Ice Palace, or what's going on? How'd she get in there so easily?
I don't think there's much security at the Ice Palace, because like Gordon said, he burned all the hockey equipment, so there's really nothing there to steal. So
yeah,
there's really no reason to have any security. And of course, Gordon is gonna glom up any leftover pizza or birthday cake from the party. So he established that.
Yeah, Greg, we gotta ask you. If you're an owner of an ice rink and there's leftover birthday cake, are you eating it, Greg?
No, I don't know where that cake's been.
I think pre-COVID,
pre-COVID, but post-COVID, it's like, what? Who's touched that cake? Have they had hand sanitizer on them? I don't know.
How times change. Yeah.
So Gordon gives her a tip, and he's like, well, I'm really not helping you, but if you kind of want my advice, go to the Lost and Found at the Hendrix Complex and just take equipment. And Alex, I would say, really had a good plan for this, and it really worked.
Oh, yeah. This was a foolproof plan, and it worked for perfection by Alex. This is the one good thing she did in this episode.
Yeah.
She goes, all right, Evan, you're going to go first, say that you lost somebody and have her come and escort you to the complex. Then Logan, you're going to distract her with your long hair and beautiful smile. And the lady at the secretary of this at the secretary post, she is so perplexed and infatuated by Logan that it allows the other players to get on through. And the, what is it, Law? Is it Lauren that's the warrior princess, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she goes, oh, I brought my nunchucks here in case we have to take somebody out. And Evan's like, no, put those away. We don't have to take anybody out.
Hey, you never know when the Foot Clan's going to show up.
So the team starts getting their... The team starts getting their skates, their pads and stuff. So it's almost like in D1 without paying, you know, that they went to a skate shop basically and they bought all their equipment paid by Mr. Ducksworth. Here they're just taking the equipment out of the Lost and Found. I mean, is that really stealing? You know, if nobody claims it, and it's just sitting there, why not just give it to a team that's trying again, right?
Yeah, and Evan actually finds his magic wand stick that he used when he played for the Ducks. So, yeah.
And he said he lost it 2 years ago. So who knows how long this equipment's been sitting there?
Yeah, no.
They're just doing them a favor by taking it.
Yeah. So then Sam actually starts making noise, and they're like, "Sam, what are you doing?" You said create a diversion. That's only if we needed to in an emergency. Don't do it now. So they're all walking. So they all walk out the equipment, and then it's we're into game day, and this is the first game. Now, I think they did a good job here with the first team that they play by not making it the Ducks, who are essentially, which we know are the hardest team based on their championships that they've won. You know, in the first film, they started the District 5 team off against the Hawks, so the heavy favorites are playing the worst team here. Here it's different. The Don't Bothers, they're called the Don't Bothers, and we'll learn that they get their jerseys here as well. They're playing the Cardinals first. Greg, do you think that was a great idea? Hold the Ducks off until another episode?
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. You don't want – it's like you want to have a slow – like in wrestling terms, you want to have a slow build to when they play the heels. So you just want to start out by playing, a mid-card talent like the Cardinals.
I think in the preview for the next episode, I think the Ducks is game two. So spoiler alert. Yeah. But what did you guys think of the jerseys? They kind of look like Cleveland Browns ish jerseys, like an orange brown thing.
They kind of remind me of Winter Classic ish jerseys.
Yeah, mixture of colors and stuff. Yeah.
What I liked is that they got the jerseys early on instead of them having to go out and just sweatshirts and non-pads and stuff, you know. So it was good on Alex to get the jerseys right away.
Yeah, because considering, what was it? Charlie in the first movie when they're playing the Hawks is just wearing, a University of Minnesota sweater.
Yeah, and that's what Evan wears, too. Evan wears that same, sweatshirt of just says Minnesota on it. And at least here, the kids had helmets where Charlie doesn't even have a helmet. He's just getting his face smacked into the boards.
Yeah. Coach Riley doing all those dickish moves. Yeah, that player has no helmet. Yeah, just check him into the boards.
So then Alex says a good speech that no matter how many times they get knocked down, they need to get back up. Do you think that was a good line, Jay, by Alex there?
Pretty good. But that was about the only decent thing she did. But yeah, maybe she spoiled them a little with the jerseys too, because they didn't come out and give much of a performance. So. Poor Coop.
Oh yeah. So the team, they come onto the ice. And Nick and Evan go to Logan. They go, "Oh, why don't you take face off?" And he's like, okay. And within 5 seconds, the Cardinals scored a goal. And then when they ask Logan, "Why didn't you get the face off?" He goes, "Well, if I move the stick, then I'm going to fall down."
Makes sense.
So they get smashed and beaten by the Cardinals 12-0. And you see Gordon is watching through his window. I didn't know they were going to deem the Ice Palace a playable ice rink. I thought that all the games were going to be at neutral zones, or at least on the Ducks turf, you know, that they allowed all the teams just to play their games at Hendricks Stadium. What did you think, Greg?
Well, I'm not kind of sure, because is this league? Because I'm assuming, because this is the 12-14-year-old division, and in the first Mighty Ducks movie, it was Pee Wee Hockey, right?
Yeah.
So this is not peewee hockey in Game Changers.
It essentially it is, because, like, you know, middle schoolers are still deemed playing peewee hockey.
Okay, so
like it, yeah. It kind of is, yeah.
Yeah, so but, I'm not even sure, because in the first movie I'm under the impression like it's by school districts, because the Ducks are District 5.
Yeah, I wasn't too paying attention to how the districts worked in the first film.
Yeah, because I think the only reason the district comes into play is when they use it as an excuse to get Adam Banks off the Hawks.
So the Ducks obviously lose their first game to the Cardinals 12-0. And when Coob is playing goalie, he goes, X, X. And Nick goes, Coob, what are you doing? He goes, if I hit the X button, I'll be able to stop shots and use my stick move. This isn't a game, video game. This is real life. He goes, I really don't know how to play goalie then in real life.
Yeah. Once again, a little too heavy on you know, everybody being extra weird. I mean, we know they're all misfits. They don't have to pound you over the head and how, you know, how they're weird and that they're outcasts and everything. They really go a little too overboard on, you know, on how they're all friggin' misfits and everything. So not a big fan of that.
So then they go back to the locker room. You know, they're in pain. They're rehydrating themselves, and, you know, Alex goes, all right, well, it was a good try, guys. You know, you should be proud of yourselves. And then Evan goes, well, it's not that fun losing 12-0, getting beaten that badly. So instead of taking the high road and not caring like the Ducks did in the first movie, because they go, we're the ones getting our butts kicked. Where were you? Why aren't you coaching us? You know, Evan takes charge and he tells the Ducks, let's get back on the ice and start really practicing.
Yeah, that part saved Evan saved the episode for me, because that's a big key where, you know, the parents are always saying, oh, the parents that aren't that competitive say, oh, it's no big deal as long as the kids go out and have fun. But Evan really drove it home that, no, it's not fun to lose 12-0 and it sucks. And, you know, winning is more fun, or at least being competitive is fun, you know, so that's not fun at all. You can't just go out there and, you know, be a bunch of slapped asses. You got to go out there and at least be competitive.
Yeah, Evan made a lot of sense here as he took charge of the situation and they all got back on the ice and they're all going to get ready for the next game. So,
yeah, that really saved the episode for me. It was going downhill fast, but that Evan really saved it at the end.
Yeah, I was going to say at least all the players agreed that they need to get better and that they need to skate better and learn how to play hockey instead of just walking off and being like, oh, I don't care. I thought I did a good job. They at least understood, no, this was a very bad job that we did and we need to get better.
Yeah, Evan showed great leadership skills. And then you see a glimpse of Gordon kind of watching admirably. And
also, guys,
and Alex says she has to learn actual hockey, you know, so he even motivated his mom to get on the ball, no more that touchy-feely shit.
So, guys, here's a funny question I have to ask you, because my eyeballs, like, popped out when I saw this. Did you know that Juicy Smollett was a Mighty Duck in the first movie?
Oh, yes, I knew that very well.
Yep.
I didn't know that until I was watching a critic do a review, and then he's like, Juicy Smollett is a duck? And it turns out Juicy was, or Jussie or whatever, he's Terry Hall. I was like, oh, my goodness. So then we get to Gordon looking through the window, and he understands that Evan has really good determination and that he's not just going to walk off and say, oh, well, I tried my best. You know, he wants to get better, and the teammates obviously want to get better as well.
Yeah, because winning is more fun than losing, or at least being competitive is more fun. It's no fun losing than getting your ass kicked. Yeah.
So I would say it was a good ending. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, it's a good ending. Curious to see how it goes in episode 3. So can't wait for next Friday.
Yeah. Well, Greg, as always, before we go, since you're new on this, you're the new host on this podcast, we're also going to be doing this too. Do you have anything that you want to plug for the listeners? Anything you want, Greg?
Well, of course, you can listen to It Was a Thing on TV on the Play Speed Nation Pop feed each and every Wednesday. My co-host, Chico and Mike, we cover at least two topics relating to the world of television from years past. And we go over some pretty, pretty obscure or non-memorable stuff. And we're actually doing right now our annual pilot month, where we go over some unsold pilots over the years. So it's good. We got a pretty fun list of unsold pilots that we're going to cover in the month of April. And also, me and Chico are hosting a limited series podcast that's coming on the Place Be Nation Pop Experience each month. Is called Into the Spidey Movies, where we go over at least an entry in the Spider-Man movie franchise going into Spider-Man No Way Home, which is coming out in December.
And Johnny, what do you have?
On the North-South Connection, Extreme Three-Way Dance, latest episode just dropped. And also in this pop feed, we have the Year in Pop. We're in the almost done with the 80s. We're in the late 80s now. So.
Well, I can't wait for you guys to cover 89.
Yeah, it'll be coming.
Well, I can be found on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. I have a podcast along with Michael Cook called Extreme Resurrection. We just finished recording the debut of CM Punk from the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Nice.
And the return of Kurt Angle, and also the return of Rob Van Dam. Also, this might be the worst match of the year of 2006, when one of the main events is Batista versus Big Show for the ECW title.
Oh, is that the match where they boo it out of the building?
Yeah. You'll just have to wait and find out.
Oh.
But yeah, so that's going to do it from us here on Pop Goes the Couch. We will see you next time for episode 3.